Chapter 103. Just at this time, Dr. William Lyon Phelps, of Yale, was giving a literary talk to the Teachers Club of Hartford, dwelling on the superlative value of Mark Twain's writings for readers old and young. Mrs. F. G. Whitmore, an old Hartford friend, wrote Clemens of the things that Phelps had said as consolation for Eve's latest banishment. This gave him a chance to add something to what he had said to the reporters. To Mrs. Whitmore, in Hartford. February 7, 1907. Dear Mrs. Whitmore, but the truth is that when a library expels a book of mine and leaves an unexpurgated Bible lying around where unprotected youth and age can get hold of it, the deep unconscious irony of it delights me and doesn't anger me. But even if it angered me, such words as those of Professor Phelps would take the sting all out. Nobody attaches weight to the freaks of the Charlton Library, but when a man like Phelps speaks, the world gives attention. Someday I hope to meet him and thank him for his courage for saying those things out in public. Custom is to think a handsome thing in private, but tame it down in the utterance. I hope you are all well and happy. And thereto I add my love. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens. In May, 1907, Mark Twain was invited to England to receive from Oxford the degree of literary doctor. It was an honor that came to him as a sort of laurel crown at the end of a great career, and gratified him exceedingly. To Moberly Bell, of the London Times, he expressed his appreciation. Bell had been over in April and Clemens believed him concerned in the matter. To Moberly Bell, in London. 21 Fifth Avenue, May 3, 1907. Dear Mr. Bell, your hand is in it. And you have my best thanks. Although I wouldn't cross an ocean again for the price of the ship that carried me, I am glad to do it for an Oxford degree. I shall plan to sail for England a shade before the middle of June, so that I can have a few days in London before the 26th. Sincerely, S. 50. Clemens. He had taken a house at Tuxedo for the summer, desiring to be near New York City, and in the next letter he writes Mr. Rogers concerning his London plans. We discover, also, in this letter, that he has begun work on the Reading home, and the cost is to come entirely out of the autobiographical chapters then running in the North American Review. It may be of passing interest to note here that he had the usual house builder's fortune. He received $30,000 for the chapters. The house cost him nearly double that amount. To H. H. Rogers, in New York. Tuxedo Park, May 29, 1907. Dear Admiral, why hang it, I am not going to see you and Mrs. Rogers at all in England. It is a great disappointment. I leave there a month from now, June 29. No, I shall see you, for by your itinerary you are most likely to come to London June 21st or along there. So that is very good and satisfactory. I have declined all engagements but two: Whitelaw Reid dinner, June 21, and the Pilgrim's lunch, June 25. The Oxford ceremony is June 26. I have paid my return passage in the Mint-something, but it is just possible that I may want to stay in England a week or two longer. I can't tell yet. I do very much want to meet up with the boys for the last time. I have signed the contract for the building of the house on my Connecticut farm, and specified the cost limit, and work has been begun. The cost has to all come out of a year's installments of autobiography in the NA Review. Clara is winning her way to success and distinction with sure and steady strides. By all accounts she is singing like a bird, and is not afraid on the concert stage anymore. Tuxedo is a charming place. I think it hasn't its equal anywhere. Very best wishes to you both. S. 50. See, the story of Mark Twain's extraordinary reception and triumph in England has been told.
Mark Twain, A Biography, Chaps. Clvi-Clix.
It was, in fact, the crowning glory of his career. Perhaps one of the most satisfactory incidents of his sojourn was a dinner given to him by the staff of Punch in the historic offices at 10 Bowery Street, where no other foreign visitor had been thus honored a notable distinction. When the dinner ended, little Joy Agnew, daughter of the chief editor, entered and presented to the chief guest the original drawing of a cartoon by Bernard Partridge, which had appeared on the front page of Punch. In this picture, the presiding genius of the paper is offering to Mark Twain health, long life, and happiness from the Punch Bowl. A short time after his return to America, he received a pretty childish letter from little Miss Agnew acknowledging a photograph he had sent her, and giving a list of her pets and occupations. Such a letter always delighted Mark Twain, and his pleasure in this one is reflected in his reply. To Miss Joy Agnew, in London. Tuxedo Park, New York. Unto you greetings and salutation and worship, you dear, sweet little rightly named Joy. I can see you now almost as vividly as I saw you that night, when you sat flashing and beaming upon those somber swallow tails. Air as a star, when only one is shining in the sky. Oh, you were indeed the only one, there wasn't even the remotest chance of competition with you, dear. Ah, you are a decoration, you little witch. The idea of your house going to the wanton expense of a flower garden. Aren't you enough? And what do you want to go and discourage the other flowers for? Is that the right spirit? Is it considerate? Is it kind? How do you suppose they feel when you come around looking the way you look? And you so pink, and sweet and dainty and lovely and supernatural? Why, it makes them feel embarrassed and artificial, of course, and in my opinion it is just as pathetic as it can be. Now then, you want to reform, dear, and do right. Well, certainly you are well off, Joy. 3 bantams, 3 goldfish, 3 doves, 6 canaries, 2 dogs, 1 cat. All you need, now, to be permanently beyond the reach of want, is one more dog, just one more good, gentle, high-principled, affectionate, loyal dog who wouldn't want any nobler service than the golden privilege of lying at your door, nights, and biting everything that came along, and I am that very one, and ready to come at the dropping of a hat. Do you think you could convey my love, and thanks to your Addie and Owen Seaman and those other oppressed, and downtrodden subjects of yours, you darling small tyrant? On my knees. These, with the kiss of fealty from your other subject, Mark Twain, Eleanor Glynn, author of 3 Weeks and Other Erotic Tales, was in America that winter and asked permission to call on Mark Twain. An appointment was made, and Clemens discussed with her, for an hour or more, those crucial phases of life which have made living a complex problem since the days of Eve in Eden. Mrs. Glynn had never before heard anything like Mark Twain's wonderful talk, and she was anxious to print their interview. She wrote what she could remember of it, and sent it to him for approval. If his conversation had been frank, his refusal was hardly less so. To Mrs. Eleanor Glynn, in New York. January 22, 08. Dear Mrs. Glynn, it reads pretty poorly, I get the sense of it, but it is a poor literary job. However, it would have to be that, because nobody can be reported even approximately, except by a stenographer. Approximations, synopsized speeches, translated poems, artificial flowers and chromos all have a sort of value, but it is small. If you had put upon paper what I really said, it would have wrecked your type machine. I said some fetid, over-vigorous things, but that was because it was a confidential conversation. I said nothing for print. My own report of the same conversation reads like Satan roasting a Sunday school. It, and certain other readable chapters of my autobiography, will not be published until all the Clemens family are dead, dead and correspondingly indifferent. They were written to entertain me, not the rest of the world. I am not here to do good, at least, not to do it intentionally. You must pardon me for dictating this letter. I am sick abed, and not feeling as well as I might. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens.
Among the cultured men of England, Mark Twain had no greater admirer or warmer friend than Andrew Lang. They were at one on most literary subjects, and especially so in their admiration of the life and character of Joan of Arc. Both had written of her, and both held her to be something almost more than mortal. When, therefore, Anatole France published his exhaustive biography of the Maid of Domremy, a book in which he followed, with exaggerated minuteness and innumerable footnotes, every step of Joan's physical career at the expense of her spiritual life, which he was inclined to cheapen, Lang wrote feelingly, and with some contempt, of the performance, inviting the author of the personal recollections to come to the rescue of their heroine. Amper every one of his statements with the passages he cites from authorities, and make him the laughter of the world, he wrote. If you are lazy about comparing, I can make you a complete set of what the authorities say, and of what this amazing novelist says that they say. When I tell you that he thinks the Epiphany, January 6, 12th night, is December 25th, Christmas Day, you begin to see what an egregious ass he is. Treat him like Doughton, and oblige a reference to Mark Twain's defense of Harriet Shelley, in which he had heaped ridicule on Doughton's Life of the Poet, a masterly performance, one of the best that ever came from Mark Twain's pen. Lang's suggestion would seem to have been a welcome one. To Andrew Lang, in London. New York, April 25, 1908. Dear Mr. Lang, I haven't seen the book nor any review of it, but only not very understandable references to it of a sort which discomforted me, but of course set my interest on fire. I don't want to have to read it in French. I should lose the nice shades, and should do a lot of gross misinterpreting too. But there'll be a translation soon, Nictoire. I will wait for it. I note with joy that you say colon if you are lazy about comparing, which I most certainly am. I can make you a complete set of what the authorities say, and of what this amazing novelist says that they say. Ah, do it for me. Then I will attempt the article, and if I succeed in doing it to my satisfaction, will publish it. It is long since I touched a pen, 312 years, and I was intending to continue this happy holiday to the gallows, but there are things that could beguile me to break this blessed Sabbath. Yours very sincerely, S50. Clemens. Certainly it is an interesting fact that an Englishman, one of the race that burned Joan, should feel moved to defend her memory against the top-heavy perversions of a distinguished French author. But Lang seems never to have sent the notes. The copying would have been a tremendous task, and perhaps he never found the time for it. We may regret today that he did not, for Mark Twain's article on the French author's Joan would have been at least unique. Samuel Clemens could never accustom himself to the loss of his wife. From the time of her death, marriage, which had brought him his greatest joy in life, presented itself to him always with the thought of bereavement, waiting somewhere just behind. The news of an approaching wedding saddened him, and there was nearly always a somber tinge in his congratulations, of which the following to a dear friend is an example. To Father Fitzsimon, in Washington. June 5, 08. Dear Father Fitzsimon, marriage, yes, it is the supreme felicity of life, I concede it. And it is also the supreme tragedy of life. The deeper the love, the surer the tragedy. And the more disconsolating when it comes. And so I congratulate you. Not perfunctorily, not lukewarmly, but with a fervency and fire that no word in the dictionary is strong enough to convey. And in the same breath, and with the same depth and sincerity, I grieve for you. Not for both of you, and not for the one that shall go first, but for the one that is fated to be left behind. For that one there is no recompense. For that one no recompense is possible. There are times, thousands of times, when I can expose the half of my mind, and conceal the other half. But in the matter of the tragedy of marriage, I feel too deeply for that, and I have to bleed it all out, or shut it all in.
and so you must consider what I have been through, and am passing through, and be charitable with me. Make the most of the sunshine, and I hope it will last long, ever so long. I do not really want to be present, yet for friendship's sake, and because I honor you so, I would be there if I could. Most sincerely your friend, S. 50. Clemens. The new home at Reading was completed in the spring of 1908, and on the 18th of June, when it was entirely fitted and furnished, Mark Twain entered it for the first time. He had never even seen the place, nor carefully examined plans which John Howells had made for his house. He preferred the surprise of it, and the general avoidance of detail. That he was satisfied with the result will be seen in his letters. He named it at first Nuisance at Home, later changing this title to Tormfield. The letter which follows is an acknowledgement of an interesting souvenir from the battlefield of Tewkesbury, 1471, and some relics of the Cavalier and Roundhead regiments encamped at Tewkesbury in 1643. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.